Okay, everybody, welcome back to another episode of Porkins Policy Radio. As always, I am your host, Pierce Redman, and you can find this podcast and every other podcast I do by going to PorkinsPolicyReview.com. Well, welcome back, everybody. I know I must sound like a broken record. I'm always talking about, we're going to be back with lots of new podcasts. And I was just looking the other day to see, and the last person we talked to is our good friend Tom Secker, and that was a month ago. So my apologies again. I'm slowly getting back into the swing of podcasting. I was away on vacation, as some of you probably already know from Twitter and on my website. But I'm back, and I couldn't be more excited about the guests that we have on today. And today, joining us from Henderson, Nevada, is Ed Opperman. And for anyone that doesn't know, Ed hosts his own podcast, radio show, The Opperman Report, which, I just can't stress enough that you all need to go out and download like every episode because they're all amazing. Ed is a private investigator as well. And his radio show deals with so many different excellent topics and real true investigations. And it's got an excellent sort of old school conspiracy radio talk show vibe to it. And Ed covers all sorts of things. Jim Jones, the Son of Sam, serial killers, all sorts of interesting things. And he's also covered the case that we're going to be dealing with today. But Ed, why don't you introduce yourself, fill in the guests on anything that I might have left out in your bio there, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Pierce. Thank you for having me on. Well, let's see. Okay, I'm a private investigator, and I'm also a digital forensic investigator. So as a PI, I do all the regular stuff that PIs do, background checks, locates, all that kind of stuff. And then as a digital forensic investigator, people will send me cell phones and hard drives, and we'll recover the data off the device in order to create an exhibit for court. And then I started doing this radio show. So I try and use the same kind of methodical practices that I do in my work, for the show, and trying to, kind of cut out all the nonsense.
Yeah.
And the hype, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And try and stick to the facts and stuff. I like to say, hey, I could testify in court that I know this is true, as sort of like where the baseline is of what I'm trying to get out here.
Mm. No, absolutely. And it really does come across in all of your episodes. It's really – it is a fact-based show. Again, you're also willing to admit, I might have made a mistake here, or I don't really know if this is the most credible source. You also have a wide variety of guests on, people – I know there's a lot of people, myself included sometimes, you're a little hesitant. Oh, do I trust this guy? Is this okay? But you're very much more based on, well, let him just, say what he's going to say. And we can make up our mind. I'm sure you don't necessarily agree with everything that your guests say. And I'll just add, too, that Ed is a fellow New Yorker like myself. And that's very refreshing to hear in alternative media. There's just not a lot of real true New Yorkers doing this sort of work. I just really appreciate, Ed, all of your focus on things like the Son of Sam and the crazy stuff that was going on in New York. I know everyone is very much obsessed, and rightfully so, with California and the wild scene going on there. But you really do bring out the fact that New York is, as crazy, if not crazier, with a lot of these, serial killers and cults and things like that. So, excellent stuff. Again, I really can't recommend the Opperman Report. I've been obsessively downloading like every episode and going through them, so it's very good. But let's get on to this episode and why I've asked Ed on the show. So I'm sure the listeners are somewhat familiar with this guy Jeffrey Epstein. He is this quote unquote billionaire pedophile who has been linked to probably a much larger pedophile ring. This involves all sorts of crazy cast of characters that we'll get into, like Bill Clinton, Ehud Barak, a litany, a list of who's who. But let me just say, before we kind of get into this, this is going to be, a fairly probably upsetting podcast for some people. We're going to be, this is a pretty dark subject, so keep that in mind. And Also, you know, just kind of keep in mind that these sort of things that don't get covered very well in the alternative media, of course not in the mainstream media, and this is a case that I've been very interested in, but it is something that's difficult to broach in the right way without making it kind of, you know, sensational or making it there's a very creepy, I don't know, voyeuristic quality to a lot of the alternative media reporting on this, and I think we'll get into that later. But anyway, suffice it to say, Ed has done quite a bit of research on this. And for anyone that doesn't know, I'll kind of give a brief rundown of the Epstein case, and then Ed, I'll throw it back to you if you want to kind of fill us in on some of the more specific details. But March 15th, 2005 to about February 2006, the Palm Beach police conducted an investigation into allegations of sexual battery against Jeffrey Epstein, this very rich and powerful guy. They got statements from about five victims between the ages of like 12 to possibly 16, and 17 witnesses that Epstein molested or raped these girls. Now, you can go through the probable cause affidavit, and I'll provide a link to that because it goes into, I mean, graphic detail about Epstein's behavior, what was going on. It points out all sorts of things, that this house was bugged with cameras, the walls were lined with child pornography, a whole bunch of really wild stuff. Now, eventually, the FBI would actually get involved in this case, and they would identify 34 minors that Epstein had assaulted. So, you know, instantly you're kind of thinking, oh my God, this, you know, they've got this guy dead to rights. I mean, they went through his garbage. They found stuff. They had all these young girls coming forward and, you know, giving them information on this. But unfortunately, the actual case never actually went to trial. Instead, a secretive plea deal was struck between Epstein's lawyer and federal prosecutors. Now, this resulted, among other things, in Epstein evading federal charges. He would have, you know, I think been sentenced to like a mandatory of at least 10 years, but instead he only copped to state charges. And now, of those state charges, all he really did was admit to soliciting an underage prostitute. And he was, sentenced to 18 months. And, you know, the idea of soliciting an underage prostitute doesn't really make sense to me. You know, if she's underage, she can't consent. So I don't know how you could solicit her. You know, it's like one of those crazy laws where it's sort of, you know, this 12-year-old girl is a prostitute somehow. But anyway, of these 18 months, Epstein actually only served 13, and he was on a work release, which allowed him to leave his jail cell every single day, I believe, except for Sundays. And he only had to come back at night for 8 hours to sleep in there. And this guy was flying all around. He would go down to the Virgin Islands, to his private island. You know, a bunch of other wild stuff within just the work release alone. And the victims of Epstein were never really properly notified about this plea deal, which also included immunity for Epstein and all of his co-conspirators. While this happened, there were reports in the local Florida media, like the Palm Beach Post, I believe, wrote about this. But again, it was a very, you know, sort of safe reporting on this. You know, it would mention, yes, he might have had sex with one underage girl. But again, it was this, you know, so I think when people see prostitute in the sort of thing, they sort of, oh, well, you know, she was into it or you know, something like that. She didn't tell him how old she was. You know, that kind of people justify these things in all sorts of crazy ways. But and then again, 2010, Epstein is released from prison. He has this huge party where, you know, his buddy Prince Andrew, who is also involved in this, he attends, Katie Couric, George Stephanopoulos, Woody Allen, a whole bunch of people. He famously told the New York Post when he got out, quote, "I'm not a sexual predator, I'm an offender. It's the difference between a murderer and a person who steals a bagel. The crime that was supposedly committed in Florida is not a crime in New York." Again, this is having sex with a 12-year-old girl that he paid money to. I don't know what he thinks the law is, but anyway. Now, many of these sort of details and the peculiarities of all of this case was sort of emerged again in 2011 when a woman, 31-year-old Virginia Roberts, began speaking out and basically coming to the press and explaining that she was one of Epstein's, you know, the media has dubbed her a sex slave. And she's more or less a, you know, says, yeah, that's an apt description for that. Roberts began coming again to the media, confirming what a lot of these Jane Does were saying in during a civil case. Now, there is an ongoing civil trial right now against Epstein by some of the victims of Epstein's, and they're basically suing the federal government because they were never actually told about this secretive plea deal. They were never brought in to testify. And it's actually come out just in the past 2 months, I believe, a bunch of documents outlining the fact that not only was the government working with Epstein's lawyers, but all of them were colluding together to, A, not let the victims know about this until after Epstein had already made the plea deal, and a whole bunch of other wildly inappropriate things. They're meeting, quote, off campus to discuss this sort of stuff. They knowingly knew that there were 34 other underage victims that they were going to leave out of all of this stuff. So, and then, you know, then the case sort of, you know, brought on another level where we get the fact that Bill Clinton is flying around with Epstein in his jet. He knows Ehud Barak, Chris Tucker, a whole bunch of other people. Alan Dershowitz, of course, is one of his lawyers, and we'll get into to all of that. But Ed, I don't know. I'll throw it to you. Is there anything you kind of want to flesh out there, or add, or you know, kind of elaborate on maybe the case and what's going on right now?
Well, that's a terrific synopsis there. Okay, that's excellent, and it does get a lot of this information out there. A couple of things I'd like to say is about the litigation that's going on right now. You described it accurately, which most of the media doesn't. And so the idea that it's sort of a he said, she said with these victims, the judge has said he's guilty.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. That's settled. You know, the guy's guilty. And you're right. The girls, their problem is that they weren't notified of the plea negotiations and all that kind of stuff. So that's what the people need to get to wrap their head around that. One little fact about this young woman, Virginia Roberts, who now, you know, she married this karate instructor and she's like in hiding in another country right now, which is why she's able to speak out. But Epstein was able to get a hold of this girl because at 15 years old, she was working at the Trump property in Mar-a-Lago down in Palm Beach, Florida, in the women's locker room. There's a towel girl in there. And she was targeted by Ghislaine Maxwell, who's the daughter of Robert Maxwell, who's this famous UK tabloid guy involved in all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, I just did a show on Thursday with this guest, really good guest, Jeffrey Gislin. He just came out with a brand new book, and he talks about how Maxwell was involved in arms dealings with Khashoggi. I know. And all this.
Oh, boy.
And Khashoggi, too, he's involved in Mar-a-Lago down there at the Trump.
Yes, right?
Right. So this chick, Ghislaine Maxwell, who procured this young girl, Virginia Roberts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That now, allegedly, she had on her phone and her computers all kinds of child pornography, all kinds of transactions. She was the recruiter, you know. And even after Epstein was convicted, Ghislaine Maxwell was invited to the Chelsea Clinton wedding with Bill and Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you can actually see Maxwell peeking her head out. She was like right on the aisle, you know, like great seats for this. Yeah, this is after all the allegations. This is after her, you know, ex-boyfriend Epstein goes to prison. And again, let's just focus on that for a minute, Ed, because it's crazy. You know, people aren't even necessarily denying. His friends aren't even denying what happened. You know, he pled guilty to having sex with a 14-year-old girl that he paid money to. And, you know, he gets out of prison and people, I mean, are lining up to go talk to him. You know, he gives a ton of money to Harvard. He's all these Nobel Prize scientists. you know, he's anyone that's interested, you know, he's into some really out there kind of crazy transhumanist, you know, thinking computers and some sort of music machine that would heal depression and a bunch of really crazy, wild stuff. And he just gives away this money like it's going out of style. And people don't really seem to have a problem with him. This is something that I just found absolutely insane. You know, like what is Katie Couric doing going to this guy's house?
Exactly. And especially when you consider that the house in Palm Beach, when you walked in there, like you said, there was child pornography all over the walls. Mm. There's not much that's hidden here that the people around him could not know. Vanity Fair did an article about him when it first came out about him flying Clinton around on the plane. And there's a lot of stuff that they left out. They even wrote another article where they said all the stuff we left out of the first article. Mm-hmm. Bizarre Eastern European teenage girls dressed like hookers, you know, at these parties, at New York City cocktail parties with you know, the head of the museum, you know, and the Guggenheim guy there, you know?
Yeah. No, Ed, I mean, just explain this. I mean, you understand the law pretty well. The fact that this guy had, conceivably, tens if not hundreds of pictures of underage girls all over the Palm Beach house, anyone that walked in and viewed them, I mean, what would, you know, that's against the law, is it not?
Yeah, you would think so. Yes, that is a crime. And the butler, you know, and Ghislaine Maxwell, they were all in there. They talked about this openly. Mm. Every girl, and you read the probable cause affidavit, every single girl described this, that when you walked in, there was no way to miss this. Mm. So when you hear about him having parties with Katie Couric and all these people, you know, how could they miss it? That was in Palm Beach. We don't know how many of them went down to Palm Beach, you know, but they were definitely at his property there in Manhattan. We know that for a fact. So, and who knows what he has on the walls over there? Interesting thing that it struck me. They describe in the Vanity Fair article that he had, when you walk in glass cases, he has all these eyeballs.
Yes.
Right. And you know, in that black magic witchcraft kind of stuff, they have that thing where people can't see what you're doing if you have an eyeball staring back at them, you know? And you know who else had an eyeball on his ring was Jimmy Savile.
Yes, yeah. That he, you know, got off a corpse that he might have had sex with, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, that it's really bizarre.
Yeah, no, the eyeballs, yeah, well, I think we'll try and touch on that later, but the kind of possible occult things or black magic going on with this, because I just can't help but think that there's some truth to that with this. The eyeballs thing is very, you know, all of these, and I think the Vicki Ward, who wrote this Vanity Fair article, and she's recently written another article basically talking about how she tried to warn everybody about Epstein, but the editors at Vanity Fair wouldn't let her. She said that the eyes all came from, I think it was World War II soldiers who had lost their eyes.
No, they were artificial eyes. They were prosthetic.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Like World War I or World War II, something bizarre.
Yeah, like that. Right. Yeah. God only knows where Epstein got these. But Ed, why don't you kind of flesh out Epstein a little bit? Because he's got a pretty interesting biography. And it is fairly scant, but there are some interesting details. And again, this is something that the media just sort of ignored, both alternative and the mainstream, kind of ignores where this guy came from, where his jobs, the cast of characters that he knew back in the 80s when he was sort of getting started. Why don't you kind of explain that to the listeners?
You're right. They don't talk about where he came from. The guy used to be a school teacher.
Yes.
You know? Now, yeah. He was born in Coney Island, Brooklyn. And he went to Lafayette High School. Now, I don't know what Lafayette High School is like nowadays, but I know when I was a kid, Lafayette High School was like Welcome Back, Cotter High School, you know, the old TV show. It was a real, you know, inner city type of school. So he comes out of there, and somehow he winds up at Cooper Union in the Village. And again, at the time, Cooper Union, they only accepted like 5% of their applicants. But once you were accepted there, you got a totally free education, you know? So he left there. Somehow he winds up over at NYU, but he left all these places without any kind of degree. And then he goes to work at the Dalton School, which is a real fancy Upper East Side. It's in the upper 80s over there, because I know my grandmother used to live over there, and I used to see these kids from the Dalton School. And it's a private school. And again, he taught middle school. And these are the kind of kids he's attracted to. And also, too, one of his fetishes with these girls was the schoolgirl outfits. And that's the same kind of outfits that the kids that he was teaching. Now, somehow, he leaves there in some way and winds up over at Bear Stearns. Because one of the female students, one of his students over there at the Dalton School, the father was a big shot over at Bear Stearns. And somehow, he was tutoring one of the kids. He was tutoring the son of the Bear Stearns guys and became friendly with the guy's daughter of this guy. Yeah, I know. You got to look back now and wonder what happened there. But somehow. Now, you're from New York, okay, yeah. Staten Island. We know a lot of guys who come out of high school and they get a job down at Bear Stearns, okay? They don't have a college degree, and they're a trader down at Bear Stearns, blah, 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 doing whatever they do. And they get nice bonus. You know, you can pretty much put a monkey in those kind of jobs. You can you make a decent living. You know, it's an interesting life, you know? I hung out down on Wall Street, down at the Fleet House, down on Water Street. But what do you call it? But he becomes a partner at Bear Stearns.
Yeah.
How does he pull that off, man? He becomes some kind of, he leaves Bear Stearns as a partner after like 6 years, okay? There was just a little bit of a scandal. He was questioned by the SEC for some kind of insider trading, whatever was going on. He leaves Bear Stearns and he starts this company with this guy. I believe his name is Hoffenberg.
Yes.
Right. Now, did you look into Hoffenberg? Because just recently somebody was telling me, and now I can't even remember what they were telling me, but there's a whole thing about Hoffenberg that we have to get. Oh, wow. Yeah. I remember what it is now. Oh, my God. I got to look into Hoffenberg is behind. He put up the money behind a PR campaign that involved the Haley Cummings case down there in Florida.
Really?
And the Casey Anthony case. Yeah, we got to look into that. I forgot all about that. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Hoffenberg is a real – I mean, he's in jail right now for 20 years. He's before Bernie Madoff, there was Stephen Hoffenberg. It's a $450 million Ponzi scheme. And, you know, him and Epstein were – you know, they ran a company together ripping people off.
Yeah, and it's really interesting too, because if you look at some, because there's detailed information on all their scams with that, but a lot of their scams were small time, like $25,000 and fines and things that they didn't pay penny ante stuff when you consider the amount of money that they were tossing around. So he leaves Bear Stearns, he's hanging around with Hoffenberg, they got that little operation going on. You never hear about that in his bio.
No.
But then he hooks up with Leslie Wexler. Who actually either gave or sold Epstein that property with all the eyeballs in it up there in Manhattan, which is supposed to be one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in all of Manhattan, privately owned townhouse. So Leslie Wexler, he owns Limited, he owns Abercrombie & Fitch, he owns Victoria's Secrets. Now, there's a lot of speculation and They kind of describe their relationship as sort of a partnership. Now, this is the only client that we know that Epstein has where he's managing their money. Very interesting quote by Epstein one time too as well was he said, you know, when you're managing money for these billionaires, they're not really interested in making money. They're worried about losing their money.
Mm.
Now, that's the word. Then when I hear that, I hear the mind of a blackmailer.
Yeah.
All I got to do is get in there and threaten that they're going to lose their whole fortune and actually have to go out and work for a living.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my God. Thurston Howell III, work.
Yeah, right.
Just work for a living. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Jump off the mountain at first, you know.
Right.
And it is kind of interesting, too, how – I don't know if you have any kids or anything like that, but the Limited has a toddler kind of called the Limited 2. Where they sell to 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds and 10-year-olds, preteens, tweens, and little girls. And it's very provocative kind of clothing that they sell in there. You know, it's fashionable, but it's too mature. You know, it just seems like a lot of grooming going on there. And that's his only source of income that we know about right now is that his only client. So when you go into Victoria's Secrets and you go into the Limited and Abercrombie & Fitch, you're putting money into the hands of these kind of people.
Yeah, absolutely. Les Wexler sounds, just super creepy. Anyway, any sort of old fart, worth several billions of dollars who makes his money, turning little girls into these, like, hyper-sexualized, sluts, basically.
Yeah.
Perverse sort of individual. Of note, Les Wexner is very connected to Mitt Romney, very, very highly connected to the Republican Party. I know a lot of people made a big stink about Epstein because he has all these sort of Democratic connections, but, there's a plenty of Republican connections as well. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah, because, Jeb Bush was the governor down there in Florida when all this was going on, and
Right, I didn't even think about that.
Right, W. Bush was the president. And it's interesting now, because I can look at everything with a suspicious eye. But you see Trump attacking Jeb Bush here viciously. Come on. Mm. All this happening right under Trump's nose, and Trump even gave a quote. I'm sure you have it, because if you read I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. Booms Trump from a speakerphone. He's a lot of fun to be with. We're going to make America great again. He is even that he likes beautiful women as much as I do, and many of them on the younger side. No doubt about it, Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Now, that's Donald Trump. Before Jeff was convicted.
Right.
But still, he knew him for 15 years. Mm.
And then, recently when a lot of these revelations came out, someone asked Trump about this, and he was like, I never heard of the guy. I think he went to my club. I sort of vaguely knew him. Not a big, When they've got this guy on record, and this is an interesting thing, Adam. I'd like to get your take on this. Victoria Ward, she's spoken about this in the media. But when she was trying to write this article on Epstein, she sort of, was asked by – she was very pregnant at the time, she said. So she couldn't fly around. She really couldn't do a lot. And her editor over at Vanity Fair said, well, why don't you look into this guy Epstein? He's sort of this Gatsby-type character. He's this billionaire, but no one knows where he got his money. No one really knows who he is, but he had recently flown Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker and also a porn star, it came out, over to Africa for an AIDS conference. Which is just so, the cover that these guys use to jet around is disgusting. But, so she is investigating, looking into him. She's trying to write this article, and she said that, Epstein was I don't want to interfere at all. You write what you want to write. And this guy is calling her at home. He's summoning her at all hours of the night, to come over to his house. She said that before, she even really started looking into this, Ace Greenberg at Bear Stearns, the CEO, is calling her up out of the blue saying, oh, Jeff is so wonderful. Dershowitz, who we'll get into him, he could not stop gushing about this guy. And she claims that he was really quite boring, not very interesting, was kind of an asshole to her all the time. Hindsight, was he blackmailing all of these people? And is this, they're coming forward, we got to make this guy look good right now. They're going to do this big piece on him. No one wants to have anything bad. What is your take on this? Again, Trump, I've known the guy for 15 years. He's amazing.
Yeah. And you got to remember, too, as far as Trump goes, is that one of these victims was procured on a Trump property.
Mm.
And her dad, her dad was a maintenance engineer at the property down there, and he's retired with a horse ranch, which is, to me, is, you got to take a look at that. I've worked hard my whole life. I can't afford a horse ranch. I don't know how this guy wise investing. And also, too, then you got and Prince Andrew, was down there at the Mar-a-Lago property. One more thing I'd like to point out, too, is the girl Virginia Roberts, she's the one that you see with her arm around Prince Andrew in that picture when she's about 17 years old. But there are documents that are available online. As a matter of fact, if you Google it, it should still be up there. If you just Google the case number, which is 08-80736, you just put in case number 08-80736. 80736. A lot of these documents will come up for you for free. Otherwise, you can open up an account with Pacers and you can pay for them. But there's some affidavits from her where she includes pictures of how old she was and what she looked like when Epstein first got his hands on her. And she's a little kid. She's a 12-year-old kid in like shorts and a t-shirt on the, I think it was the Staten Island Ferry.
Yes.
Right. And he saw the picture. And that's heartbreaking because I got a kid the same age. You know? That's a kid. You know, I coach
basketball. It's a child. Yeah, yeah.
It's a child. I coached basketball kids that age. And some pervert, the guy has his mitts all over. He's passing her around, all this kind of stuff. So people who take this kind of thing lightly, it's really upsetting to me. And another thing that really struck me too personally was the thing in the probable cause affidavit. When these cops describe going to the homes to investigate these cases and knocking on the door, and we showed up at their home, they weren't expecting us, and we told them their daughter was involved in this, and the daughter denied it, but then we were called back the next day. You could just imagine what went on in those homes that night with the kid trying to deny it and then admitting to it, mm-hmm. and the parents having heartache. You know, my God. So that whole thing, you're right about some people who try to play this off as like it's a joke with these kids. These are real victims, little kids. Also, too, one of the allegations about this character, Jean-Luc Brunel, who is this model scout who's still on the loose right now and even filed a lawsuit against the Epstein because his involvement in this, he came off looking all bad. There's an allegation. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
That was my reputation.
Yeah. Yeah. It will explain who he is and then we'll get into his, why how he's even suing him.
Oh, my God. Well, they did an expose on this guy years ago. I think it was 60 Minutes that he was – there were all kind of allegations about him. He was a famous modeling scout. And he would give these girls roofies and at nightclubs and stuff like that, and he was raping these girls. I don't think he's ever been convicted of anything, but he was one of Epstein's buddies. And there's also allegations that somehow this character has access to fake passports and visas and all kinds of stuff like that, and he's able to take these little girls and practically buy them from their families. And by the way, there's a woman right now who's living with Epstein that there's allegations that Epstein bought this girl
yes.
from family in Eastern Europe. You know. Anyway, but Brunel – and all these allegations about him about having fake passports, he's able to get this stuff. And it was also another thing, too, about Epstein having this kind of scam where he was able to get fake upgrades for first-class tickets back in the 80s and stuff like that.
Yes, that's right.
I knew guys that could do that in New York back in the 80s. That's very interesting, too. I got to take another look into that angle. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show you the kind of people that they're hanging out with and associating with. But Brunel also visited Epstein while he was in jail 50 times out of those 13 weeks. So he was there every Sunday, sometimes twice a day Sunday, I guess. How do you fit him in there? And a couple of things, too, I want to bring up about this jail sentence with Epstein is he was in there for 13 months, but he was in there all by himself. He had a private wing to that cell where there was no one else in there with him, and he had donated, I believe it was $95,000 or $75,000 to the sheriff's department prior to being incarcerated there. And he had as easy as you can get, you know, and but Brunel, he's suing now. And one of the allegations against Brunel, though, was that he got three 12-year-old girls from France, from Paris, and he gave them to Epstein as a wedding gift, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And this was so funny with this guy Brunel is he – yeah, he's like, you know, oh, I can't believe they're linking me to this guy. He's such a horrible person. And he's visiting this guy, like, every weekend? I mean, you know, what were they talking about? If he didn't want to look so guilty, maybe don't go and meet this guy, as you said, every weekend, maybe even twice a day.
Yeah, 50 times in the 13 months. And good questions. What were they talking about?
Yeah, exactly. What's the question? I mean, don't those – are those conversations not – I guess if it's in a federal prison, they're recorded. But if it's a state prison, would they not have recorded their conversations?
Well, in a county jail, if it's over the phone, all those calls are recorded, okay, and under normal circumstances. But I'm sure he had his own cell phone in there. I would be surprised if he didn't. I really would, in the conditions they're describing.
Yeah.
A visit, I'm sure that he had a face-to-face visit, that it wasn't through like over here at Clark County Detention Center. Yet when you want to go visit one of the detainees, you have to – you sit pretty much on TV. They go to a special room in their unit where they are, and you go to a special room in the waiting room, and you talk to them over TV, and all that's recorded. Video and audio is recorded.
Mm.
But I'm sure he didn't have to go through that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just the power that Epstein has, I'm sure. Even if those are if there are tapes or recordings, you know, we're never going to see the light of day.
For the man.
Yeah. No, and again, the Brunel is a really interesting character to look into because, again, I mean, how is this guy getting U.S. passports for 12-year-old girls from the Balkans or France to fly, you know, into New York, into Palm Beach, down to the Virgin Islands? Very interesting. And according, again, to Virginia Roberts, Brunel, procured thousands of children for Epstein. So very, very shady character. Someone to really look into. Let's get into some of the specifics of the actual case, because it has come to light recently that, as I said, there were some real peculiar things going on with this the actual plea deal. Explain a little bit of that. Explain to this. I believe his name is Acosta, Alexander Acosta. He's a former U.S. attorney. Down in the Southern District of Florida, he was the one that was actually investigating trying Epstein. And he was intimidated. Is this correct?
Yeah. Now, you got to imagine. Yeah. Acosta is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida. Right. So now he's the equivalent of Rudy Giuliani when Rudy Giuliani was the U.S. attorney for the Northern District in New York City and prosecuting all those organized crime cases. Yeah. Now, I worked on those cases, you know. I didn't have a huge role in them, but I was involved. I was a private investigator on foot of defense in those cases. And for tough guys.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Yeah, the defendants were some real serious guys. There was one time when we were supposed to be sweeping for bugs, and we didn't find a bug in this guy's house, and we were all terrified that we were going to be in big trouble. Okay.
Yeah. Wake up in a dumpster somewhere.
Yeah, because he was coming over to talk to us about it. And everybody was, and we had guns, you know. We were nervous, man. And that's a whole story by itself. But the idea that our little group of guys up there, you know, and this is a well-funded defense. You know, there was one case where this guy paid Thomas Puccio $15 million on a murder conviction, and he got away with 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But the idea that we would ever say. Because, you know, you say, well, who is the witnesses? You know, where do they live? You know, let's talk to them, you know, and interview these witnesses. But the idea that you would ever say, well, let's go after Giuliani. Mm-hmm. Let's investigate Giuliani. Let's talk to his boss. Let's talk to his coworkers, his former partners. Let's talk to his ex-wives. Let's talk to his neighbors. Let's dig up dirt on Giuliani. That we would have the balls to do that, man. God, we wouldn't think of it, okay? But that's what they did to this guy Acosta. They went after this guy. They had a team of investigators. And the dream team of lawyers, man, that Epstein had is remarkable. Jerry Lefcourt was a Fourth Amendment lawyer from New York City, who was Abby Hoffman's lawyer. Okay, I was involved with Jerry Lefcourt. He was up there with Bill Kunstler, that kind of lawyer. And then you got Kenneth Starr.
Yeah.
Dershowitz, a Harvard law professor, you know.
O.J.
Yeah.
Klaus von Bülow.
Right. So he had a way above a dream team. But Acosta wrote a 3-page letter. Now, do you have a copy of that letter? Because I haven't.
I have the. It's in a Daily Beast article.
Right.
Which of all places has actually been doing some really good reporting on Epstein. But yeah, I'll provide the links to the letter because it's wild what he asserts in this letter.
Yeah, I have not been able to see the actual letter because when I went to the Daily Beast, because the only place you could find it is in the Daily Beast article, and when I click on those links, they're dead links.
I think the links are dead, but they have the 3 pages, you know, pasted on, you know, in the article. You can view it as like a JPEG or something.
Okay, I'll have to go back and check that out. But the response to that article, you have no trouble finding that because Roy Black wrote a response.
Right.
You can find that everywhere. And Roy Black, too, you got to remember, he's the guy that did the Kennedy defense, you know, William Kennedy Smith, who raped that girl down in Florida. And he got her off. He got him off. That whole situation. So the idea that they would go after this guy, and also to his superiors were contacted in Washington, and his bosses, which would have been all the way up in the line to George W. Bush, and who went after Acosta, and it was effective because the feds did not prosecute this case. They dropped it down to the state, and he even complained, and he said, I think even some of the investigators involved in this case wrote public letters to the newspaper saying that this was all handled. It was very shady the way it was handled. Mm-hmm. And so,
yeah, no, insane. I mean, you can read, they've just released a whole bunch of email correspondence between, you know, Epstein's legal team. So, you know, some of these are from Roy Black. Some of these are from Ken Starr, a bunch of other people. Where they're just, I mean, they're like colluding with these prosecutors to basically, you know, okay, they even in one of these emails, they basically say, like, you know, we have to make sure that the government doesn't, you know what's going on. They're openly, they're discussing this with the people that are supposed to be putting Epstein in jail. You know, they talk about, well, let's meet, you know, off campus. We'll go to a bar or something like that, you know. So these people are meeting, you know, off hours, not in a courtroom. And again, they wrote multiple emails where they're basically saying, you know, like Epstein's legal team gets it all up in a tizzy about the possibility that some of these, you know, Jane Does might be notified. And you hear one of these prosecutors, you know, assuring them beyond, you know, all doubt, no, don't worry, no one will know about this until after Epstein is already, you know, pleaded and he's on his work release. Don't worry about it. So again, I mean, the level to which this is, you know, as you were saying, I mean, this is going up the chain all the way conceivably to the White House, which I wouldn't be surprised at all. I'll throw out just quickly the legal team that he has, as we mentioned, Alan Dershowitz, who we'll get to in a moment, is very involved in this. Roy Black, who defended William Kennedy Jr., Ken Starr, who went after Bill Clinton. Ed, on one of your interviews, someone was mentioning that there was someone who worked for Bush who was actually on Epstein's legal team, and that is Jay Lefkowitz, who is mentioned in some of these emails. He was the deputy director for domestic policy for George W. Bush, director of Cabinet Affairs Department, director of Cabinet Affairs, deputy executive secretary domestic policy for Bush Sr., and he was also Bush Jr.'s special envoy to North Korea. So this guy is very well connected, and the law firm that he works for is Kirkland Ellis. And Ken Starr is also a part of this law firm, as is Stephen G. Bradbury, who was the head of Office of Legal Counsel for George Bush, who, you know, basically had all of these crazy, you know, proclamations on torture and terrorism. John Bolton, the psychopath who was worked at the UN, is also part of Kirkland Ellis. And just to give you a rundown of some of their clients, Bain Capital, so here we go, Mitt Romney again, BP America, they're actually the company defending the Gulf oil spill, Facebook, very interesting, Boeing, Raytheon, Pfizer, Dow Chemical, the Blackstone Group, which is involved in all sorts of ungodly stuff, Bank of America, Sally Mae, just to name a few, and even stranger, Kirkland Ellis Law Firm was the second largest contributor to Obama's 2008 campaign, and apparently the firm's PAC, Political Action Committee, has given more money to Dick Durbin, senator from Illinois, than any other company or organization since 1989. So I thought I would just throw that out there. I'm going to, you know, look more into Kirkland Ellis because that's really bizarre. And I mean, links in so many, you know, different people, and that definitely, you know, from their clients and the people working there and their campaign contributions, seems like some kind of deep state legal team right there, deep state law firm. Wild, wild stuff. And this is the guy, again, that's defending Jeffrey Epstein. So, you know, just look at the power that this guy has. I don't know, Ed, if you have anything you want to add to that.
Well, it would appear that they're not in the business of doing home closings.
Yeah, right.
It's, you know, they're in the business of influence peddling, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can get more clear than that, you know, if they're making the second largest donation to Obama's campaign, you know. So they're not
there
doing
God, yeah. Us, you know? Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, right, of course. We've been spending a lot of time talking about Epstein's legal team. Who are the people representing Virginia Roberts? Because, again, people will portray her in the media as either a liar. I've seen people in the alternative and in the mainstream saying, oh, well, she was probably into it. And this is it's like when it's a guy who gets, is involved in some sort of molestation case with a hot teacher. Oh, well, it's okay, because the teacher was hot and the kid is a guy, so he probably liked it. And then again, when it's these girls, that look much older, like the Virginia Roberts picture with Prince Andrew. Oh, well, she was probably into it. He was paying her, so what's the big deal? Talk about her lawyers, because they're very influential people as well, and they believe her.
Yeah, Florida lawyer Brad Edwards is a big shot down in Florida. But the other lawyer is Paul Cassell, who is a former federal judge. Mm. Yeah, so this is not some ambulance-chasing law firm that's going after Epstein and representing these young women. They're doing a great job, too, very thorough. And the way that they're presenting their case is brilliant in many ways, and how they got all that stuff in there about Dershowitz and stuff, and then Dershowitz took the bait, and and starts calling her a liar. Now they're suing him. They're suing Dershowitz for defamation, and I believe they're going to win. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they're trying to say there was one little when the judge removed Virginia Roberts and the other Jane Does from the initial litigation. He didn't say that this was portrayed as being, hey, the judge threw it out. There's a big victory for Prince Andrew and Dershowitz. Oh, mm-hmm. It's all proven. But when you read those documents, it's not that at all, man. The judge says that, they're legitimate witnesses. They can come in and be witnesses in the existing litigation. And they can also file their own suits, which they probably will. And now they're going after Dershowitz, too, as defamation. So, yeah, they're doing a great job. These guys are excellent, excellent lawyers. And like I said, a former federal court judge in West Palm Beach. This guy's no joke.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Explain that, because I know I saw that. Again, I mean, this is barely reported anywhere. If an update is reported on Epstein, it's generally to kind of, placate the masses that Virginia Roberts is a liar. That she's, that she's either making this up or that she's out to get money, but right. And Dershowitz, let's get into Dershowitz. Explain some of these claims that Virginia Roberts has made in her affidavit against Dershowitz, and what Dershowitz, his relationship with Epstein. Explain that a little bit.
Well, yeah, they were friends. And Dershowitz was gushing over this guy and said, well, even if he wasn't rich, we'd still be great friends because he's just so brilliant and so wonderful. Mm-hmm. These bizarre comments, Dershowitz was donating, I think he up to $25 million to a Harvard Law.
Epstein was.
Yeah, Epstein. Yeah, he was donating a huge amount of money to Harvard Law. So that's, I suppose, that's how he became so wonderful.
Yeah.
I think he's wonderful too. Give me $50 million, but Virginia Roberts is very detailed in having to perform sex with Dershowitz and him being at different locations and on these planes. If this stuff was going on, this was right in front of Dershowitz's eyes. He can't deny it. He comes back and says, "Well, my wife was there." And I think at one time he even says, my daughter was there. I tried to look up and see how old his daughter was and find out what was going on at that. I couldn't find any information. But, yeah, it seems like Dershowitz is a – it would be a conflict of interest for him to be on the defense of this, considering that he's named and he's these allegations. I don't know. The whole thing with Dershowitz is very bizarre. At one time I was a big fan of Dershowitz, but, over the years he's just – showed himself to be a hack,
completely.
And
now if you Google Dershowitz right now, it is just endless articles and like Newsmax and other places where he's talking about how Iran is about to take over the world and bomb us back to the Stone Age, all this stuff. Nothing about Epstein or the ongoing case, and he has all of these ridiculous, he claimed, again, the same thing, like, with Trump, like, oh, I never met the guy. Dershowitz claims they him and Epstein had a strictly business relationship only, that they met for the first time, I don't know, sometime between like 2001 or 2003, and it was Evelyn de Rothschild who introduced them. So
right.
You know, now we're getting into a real another level of, you know, these pedophilia rings.
Well, Epstein's a member of the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yes, I nearly forgot that. Yeah, right. And wasn't he described as an enthusiastic member?
Yeah, well, what does that mean?
Yeah, right, I know.
I want to control the world more than everyone else does.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, and that's you never hear that mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, no, no. Right. Of course not. And then, you know, and then this is all contradicted by the flight records. Maybe we can talk about some of these flight records. But Dershowitz was on Epstein's plane as far back as December 1997, where he was on the plane with an unidentified female, Hazel, Claire, and Maxwell. And then he admitted to Gawker, oh, yeah, I guess I was on that plane in 97. But my wife was there, too, or my daughter was there. You know, nothing could have happened. Also, this isn't a small private plane. This is like a jumbo jet. You know what I mean? Stuff could be going on in this plane, and people wouldn't even know about it. This isn't like a tiny little jet where, you know, everyone could see you. It seems like Dershowitz keeps lying publicly. And he is playing this whole, Virginia Roberts and Jane Doe number 4, they can't participate in whatever this lawsuit. He's playing that as a victory for himself, correct?
Yeah, right. And when you read it, it's not a victory at all. And plus they've won that lawsuit. All the discovery that was sealed has all been unsealed. Mm-hmm. And they gave Epstein, they gave him time to appeal. I don't know if he did appeal. But I know it's all out now, so it's all in the public. So if he did appeal, he lost the appeal. real interesting about, again, real, I don't want to keep forgetting, because we keep talking about Chris Tucker was one of the guys who was on his plane. Chris Tucker has his own plane, too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Chris Tucker has his own plane. The reason why I know that is because in the trial of Michael Jackson, it came out that this little boy, Gavino, the one that was in the film Living with Michael Jackson.
Yes.
Martin Bashir, you know, that everybody watched that. And all you had to do was watch that and be creeped out, you know. And you see this little kid talking about how Michael Jackson healed him and they sleep in the same bed and all this kind of talk. So what happened was, first of all, when this boy was first brought to the comedy club by Jamie Masur, who owned the comedy club in California, he was delivered by Chris Tucker's plane, brought this kid over to the comedy club. And then Chris Tucker became involved a second time when after that video showed up of them, you know, talking about cuddling in bed and stuff, the paparazzi swarmed all over this little boy's house, and they were swarmed all over Neverland. And the little boy, Gavino, contacted Chris Tucker, how he had his number, who knows, but contacted him and said, please, Mr. Tucker, please take me down to where Michael Jackson is in Florida and take me to him so I could be safe around Michael Jackson. That's what Chris Tucker testified to in court.
Right.
It would seem to me that if anybody wanted to, you know, get this kid away from the press and over into Michael Jackson's hands, it would have been Michael Jackson who gave that order. But who am I to say, you know?
Yeah, no, I know, and you just have to wonder again. I mean, even if Chris Tucker didn't know or something. I mean, it's just, what are you doing on this guy's plane? And Kevin Spacey was on that flight. Bill yeah. Clinton was on that flight. A porn star was on that flight. I mean, not to attack porn stars at all, but you know, again, it's just sort of like, what is Bill even doing? Why is he even, you know, like, supposedly, according to New York Magazine, the Bill Clinton thing, he basically hired Epstein. He had no idea who he was, but his assistant, Doug Band, was like, oh, well, this guy's got a plane. Bill can't hire his own plane? He can't buy a plane? You know, why is he even flying around with this guy? He can't rent a plane to go to an AIDS conference?
Well, you have Epstein's phone records, and he has 30 different telephone numbers of ways to contact Bill Clinton. So these guys are not casual acquaintances. I don't have any. I don't even have one number to contact you.
Right. No. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, at most, you might have three phone numbers for someone. Yep. This guy has got every number that Clinton possibly, you know, has. Let's talk about quickly some of these other numbers in this little black book.
Real quick, let me mention Kevin Spacey.
Please,
because I'm going to have Kevin Spacey's brother on my show. Very interesting guy. He's a limo driver. I believe it's in the Utah, and he's a Rod Stewart impersonator. Okay, and
he, really?
Oh my God, this is gold. I look up these people, man. Let me tell you. Mm. And you know, their father was a neo-Nazi, white supremacist, and the brother claims that he was molested by the father, sexually molested by their father, and that both brothers were tortured and locked in closets and stuff like that in their childhood. Really, really bizarre stuff. Mm. So I can't wait to get him on and have him spill his guts. Mm. Also, too, you know, another one that was on this plane, Epstein's plane, is Courtney Love.
Yes.
Courtney Love, my goodness. Okay, she was on the plane. You know, there's a lot of we've been doing a lot of work on this because I've had Hank Harrison. I'm friends with her dad, Hank Harrison, now. He contacts me all the time. And I've had him on the show twice. And in one of the shows that I have in my members section on theopperandreport.com is an interview I just did recently with Courtney Love's dad. And fascinating. The whole Courtney Love story is just beyond belief because she went to middle school at the Presidio Middle School. Where all that the Presidio Daycare Center child molestation scandal went on with Colonel Aquino and all that. There's some speculation. And by the way, she was definitely – this kid was in all kinds of cults and all kind of bizarre stuff since childhood. I'll let you – it's too much detail to go into right now. But in my my interview that we just did with Hank Harrison about the movie Soaked in Bleach, we wanted to talk about that, but a couple of things came out because John Podesh, the author of FBI Drugs Used as a Weapon Against Us, it's a brand new book he has coming out. He wrote the book about the FBI war on Tupac Shakur as well. As I was interviewing Epstein, because I had put them in touch previously to talk about Courtney Love for the book Drugs Used as a Weapon Against Us, so I was chatting with the Podesh online as I was interviewing Hank Harrison, the father of Courtney Love. And he says, Ed, let me call in because I got to ask him a question. It turns out that Courtney Love, when she went to Ireland at 15 years old, had like 10,000 hits of LSD with her. And who was her and who was her boyfriend over there in Ireland? He was a grown adult CIA agent that was also friends with Hank Harrison. And Hank Harrison lays all this out in the interview. He talks all about it. Courtney Love was having a relationship at 15 years old with an adult CIA agent. Then we ask him, well, what about this stuff of her being on this plane with Epstein? He didn't really know who Epstein was, but he confirmed to us that Courtney Love was involved in prostitution and procuring sex trafficking, underage sex trafficking of teenagers and young preteens for elites and for parties. So that's – and she was on Epstein's plane as well.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, spent some time as a 16-year-old stripper.
In
Portland. I mean, and this is not to obviously, if she's doing this, it's horrible. But I mean, God only knows what they had to do to her to make her do this. You know, and I mean, it also makes you, you know, you just her association with Epstein makes you think twice about how Kurt Cobain died. You know, that's another episode entirely as well. Just quickly running through you're talking about, this just popped into my mind, Courtney Love's CIA connections. Of course, her father was the manager for the Grateful Dead, which have multiple CIA and Scientology connections as well.
Out of the whole thing with the electric Kool-Aid acid test, he's an old LSD guy.
Yeah.
Manager for the Grateful Dead. He hung out with the Grateful Dead. He was friends with them before they got famous. Mm-hmm. And what he tells us that his role was in all this was that he would talk people down from bad LSD trips. He was sort of like a counselor.
Right.
He's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. So this black book, he also has multiple numbers for Ehud Barak, former prime minister, defense minister of Israel, who was apparently was also on this plane several times. The entire Trump family, the Donald can deny this all he wants, but Epstein has, you know, like 10 numbers for him, has numbers for Ivana Trump, Ivanka Trump as well. Bill Richardson, the former governor of New Mexico, which is also the home to one of Epstein's very large pieces of property. All sorts of royalty, not just, I mean, there's a lot about Prince Andrew, but other English royalty. Obviously, he has a bunch of numbers for the Rothschilds, Dutch royalty, a few Saudi princes. Very interesting, too, some royalty, you know, these like former princes or princes of the former Yugoslavia, which is very interesting because apparently that one of these women that is living with Epstein right now, whose name I'm not even going to try to pronounce right now, but I'll get some links for it or something in the show notes. She allegedly, Epstein boasted that he bought her from the Balkans somewhere. So I don't even know. Lots of, quote, massage, you know, that'll be an entry in his book. And, you know, Virginia Roberts said that massage basically meant sex with a girl. And under some of these massage things, he actually writes mother of, you know? So it's like mother of, you know, I don't know. Ashley or something like that. So he had even the mother's names on this. And then two other ones that I'll just throw out is really bizarre. Linda Janklow, who works at Lincoln Center. She's on the board of directors at Lincoln Center. And that just only popped up to me because the former conductor of the Metropolitan Opera, James Levine, has had his own very, very interesting rumors about all the little kids that he was sleeping with. And I actually knew someone that worked at the Metropolitan Opera, and they told me that, yeah, that is completely true, and that he was paying out money to these families every time it would get caught to keep it out of the press and whatnot. And I don't know if you saw this, Ed, but Andrew Jarecki, Henry Jarecki, the whole Jarecki family, this guy is apparently Epstein is very close with. And Andrew Jarecki is famous right now for the TV show The Jinx, which involves Robert Durst. Even more interesting, Andrew Jarecki directed a film many years back called Capturing the Freedmans, deals with the whole Freedman pedophilia case out in Long Island. And this guy's, apparently Epstein and them are very, very close. Henry Jarecki, the father, who's a billionaire in his own right, owns a house down in the Virgin Islands.
I wasn't aware of any of that. Capturing the Freedmans is kind of a whitewash of that case of this family of pedophiles. Mm. Over there.
Yeah, I know. It's really making me rethink that whole thing. And Andrew Jarecki, people don't realize, you know, they think he's he makes very compelling documentaries. But this kid was born a billionaire. He co-founded MoviePhone and made a mint out of selling it. His father, Henry Jackson, is, a billionaire several times. Even the Jinx is, he basically helped Robert Durst get away with this stuff. Because now Durst can claim, well, I didn't know I was being filmed. So, the Capturing the Freedmans, again, makes you think twice about that movie, makes you think twice about this guy, Jesse Friedman, and whether he was actually innocent of what was going on.
Hey, did you see the film of Durst when he goes into that CVS?
Where he's bald and he's got no eyebrows.
He goes in to pick up his prescription, whatever, and he urinates. Rack. Right in front of him, he just pulls it out, whips it out, and discreetly, while he's paying, and he walks out. You know, these people are in a whole nother world, man.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, again, that, Durst would even agree to do this. Andrew Jarecki's family, the Jareckis, are very well known, especially in New York. They're part of the New York elite. This kid was born a billionaire. Who better to make a movie about this, billionaire serial killer than Andrew Jarecki? But again, the mere fact that Epstein has got so many numbers for his wife, numbers for his brothers, numbers for his father, his mother, all of this stuff, and this guy's making this documentary about the Freedmans, very, very interesting. Ed, I think we'll move on a little bit, but anything at all on the case, any of these characters, anything you want to mention?
Well, let's see. I think we covered just about everything. The atrocity of how he was treated with kid gloves in prison, the sentencing he got away with, all the millionaires and billionaires he knows with, Trump's involvement with him. yeah. You know, what a story, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's what I want. I'm sorry. I just got to throw this out. Two things. One, I actually walked past his house in Manhattan the other night. I happened to be up in that area. I was at the Metropolitan Museum, and he lives actually right across from the Frick Museum on 71st Street, just off Fifth Avenue. And do you know who lives like across the street from him, or who has a house there?
No.
Bill Cosby.
Oh, I was going to say Bill Cosby.
Yeah. And apparently, when he threw some party for Prince Andrew, and Cosby apparently kept complaining to the police because there was such security on the block.
Yeah, well, there's not only that, there's a little police substation, like not a substation, but like a police little phone booth right out in front of their property there, right?
I didn't see that when I was there the other night, but they might have moved it around. Yeah, I mean, again, people that aren't from New York, that whole area, I mean, he owns a property in France. The French consulate is like two blocks away from him. That's where all the UN, missions are all in that area. So, again, he's also the kind of – and I guess we'll kind of expand this out a little bit. We've been talking, you know, specifically about Epstein. But, Ed, you've done lots of episodes and looking into the Franklin cover-up. You've spoken with Nick Bryant, who, again, is one of the only journalists actually reporting on Epstein. How do you see this fitting into the sort of larger scheme of things? Because I know a lot of people can kind of, you know, put this little case into a box and be like, well, this is just – you know, Epstein is just a sicko. Brunel, whatever, that doesn't matter. You know, maybe he's a sicko too, but that's it. It's just these two people. And unfortunately, all these celebrities were, seduced by his, charismatic behavior and his wealth, and they just sort of got involved. And that's the end of it. You know, it was just Epstein, maybe Prince Andrew, but, you know, for whatever reason, they don't even – I mean, Andrew will deny this, and then there's a picture of him with the girl, with Virginia Roberts. But how do you kind of see this in the larger scope of things? Because I see this as just a little cog in a much larger, unfortunately, a much larger wheel that is the sort of big pedophile ring. So I don't know. How do you view this, Ed?
Well, you're right, you know. And one thing, just before we get too far away from Epstein, is his butler, this guy Alfredo Rodriguez, you know, who witnessed, you know, three little girls coming in there every single day. He actually did more time than Epstein because he was trying to sell Epstein's little black book, and he got 18 months, and he's dead today. And Nick Bryant, by the way, too, is supposed to be very, very ill and was in the hospital, a while back. I don't know what's going on with him now. When you talk about the Franklin cover-up and the whole Henry Vincent case, the Confessions of a DC Madam, and I've had David Schroeder on the phone and so all these on the show, it's the same story pretty much about how these elites, pedophilia with the young kids, sex rings, blackmail. You know, with the Henry Vincent case, the Confessions of a DC Madam, he describes how he was running a gay escort service, and he was invited over to Craig Spence's house, and Larry King was there, who was pivotal in the Franklin cover-up case. And he says, you know, they invited me into their home to talk to them, and I talked about my operation, and then they brought me into a room, and they had all this recording equipment, and then they were blackmailing me after that. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, blackmail is, you know, it's a ballsy move. You know, I have a lot of blackmail dirt on people, you know, but you when you want to pull it off, it's a big move. And he says, well, you know, Craig Spence, his team of bodyguards were all Secret Service agents. So, yeah, and by the way, too, if Bill Clinton was on this Epstein's plane, the U.S. Secret Service had to be on that plane with him as well.
They're signed in on the flight records.
Right. Right. So it and then you hear these stories back to the Franklin cover-up case about how these call boys were taken on midnight tours of the White House. Mm-hmm. And then under W. Bush, you had Jeff Gannon, the male escort with the Marine escort thing. Wow, he was in the press club down there asking these softball questions. And then he was getting he signed into the White House for visits into the White House. And then, well, you didn't sign out till the next day. You know?
Mm.
So it seems to be a pattern of blackmail. And you're right. And these aren't people that are just passing through, you know, like because even you have a guy like Colonel Michael Aquino. This guy comes out of the Phoenix Project, Phoenix Program, you know, involved in all these different NSA he worked for, you know, the first satanic chaplain in the U.S. military, that he wrote the handbook that every other chaplain, Muslim chaplains, Christian chaplains, Jewish chaplains, all have to follow his guideline of how to be chaplains in the military. So these are, well, yeah, these aren't peripheral people, you know. These are the ones. These are the guys, Prince Andrew. These are the ones in charge.
Yes.
At the highest levels of billionaires. They're the Rothschilds, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's what's – I think, and I understand the sort of the mentality. A lot of people, I think they don't want to. You know, I was talking with someone the other day and about the Epstein case and just some of the people involved, and it's really difficult sometimes for people to sort of admit that these people could be involved, or that this could really be going on such a large scale. But again, I mean, you know, just look across the Atlantic Ocean to England. With this Jimmy Savile stuff, I mean, people, respectable people, quote unquote, respectable people, admitting, oh yeah, everyone knew that Savile was doing this. You know, on BBC property, he was, you know, molesting children.
I interviewed Jimmy Savile's niece, okay, and when she was when Jimmy Savile came over to visit the house, she was 12 years old, and they dressed her up in a pretty little dress and got her all ready for Jimmy. And right in the middle of the room, in front of everybody, they sat her on his lap, and he masturbated himself right there. And then he did it again. And she said, "I don't want anything to do with this guy after that." And then he did it again. He showed up at the her engagement party to get married.
What?
Did it again, and the right in front of the family.
What?
Yeah.
And this guy is knighted by the Queen.
Right. And also too, and you see, and this with his relationship with this guy Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, where you know this guy's alive right now, got a cushy mental sentence, you know, in a mental institution rather than being in a prison, and Savile had complete run of this mental hospital where he had an office there. The guy's a comedian, a presenter, top of the pops, you know.
Right? Yeah. What is he doing running around
mental hospital?
Right, and that's the thing here with, you know, Epstein, and I guess this is my sort of question, something that I've been mulling over, and we can kind of theorize about this a little bit, but I think all my listeners are very familiar with our friend and my boss over at Boiling Frogs Post, Sibel Edmonds, and she wrote in her first novel, The Lone Gladio, you know, one of the major themes or storylines in that book is this sort of, you know, international CIA-run pedophile blackmailing program where, you know, the CIA is bugging hotel rooms and working with pimps in Southeast Asia to bring, you know, children over to blackmail politicians and things like that. And obviously, again, Henry Vinson, you know, Craig Spence was a CIA agent or asset.
Right.
You know, admitted to that. And it, you know, just sort of makes sense. And again, Epstein fits that kind of pattern of the type of true lunatic psychopath that the CIA would be into. I mean, you just look at pictures of this guy, Ed. I mean, it's like he's just nearly emotionless. You know, he either has this creepy little smile. And again, there's only like, I don't know, maybe seven pictures of this guy. Out in the public. I mean, he's never seen. You know, he had a secret entrance and exit for the jail cell when he was down in Palm Beach. But, you know, you look at this guy's background, this guy's biography. I mean, there's no mention of his parents, really. He's studying physics at Cooper Union, and then the mathematical physiology of the heart at NYU, drops out, gets a job at Bear Stearns. He's teaching children. Next thing, you know, Forbes magazine, I'll point out, refuses to call him a billionaire because they said there's no way to prove that he owns anything. You know, all of his money is offshore, and at that, they can't even figure out where it is. So, you know, again, how does this guy even make his money? So I guess what I'm wondering at it and get your take on this. I mean, Epstein has got to just be the tip of the iceberg with this. But I mean, what do you think about this, you know, sort of CIA stuff? I know we're kind of theorizing, we're kind of getting, you know, out there. But, you know, he seemed at some point the CIA has to know about this guy. I don't know. What's your take?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. Anybody with a private plane that's flying in and out of the country, you know, he's going to get on their radar. You know, especially with contacts next to embassies and all that kind of stuff, he's definitely on their radar. They looked into him, but he had, and you're right, he would have to be some kind of an asset, otherwise he wouldn't get away with this. Mm-hmm. You know, we had Tom Secker on last night. He was talking about all these guys around the 93 bombing of the World Trade Center and stuff like that, and just obvious CIA connections.
Mm, yeah. I heard you speaking on an interview once. You knew someone that worked at the UN talking about, you know, how all of those guys are compromised. And again, this guy, Epstein, not only lives around all these UN missions, but he's the kind of person that, you know, he is the real elite. Right. Operates, you know, they're all in New York, you know what I mean? But this guy is, you know, part of the establishment in so many ways. He's the kind of person, and again, I mean, you go by his townhouse, it's like seven stories. I'm sure he had all sorts of parties with UN officials, you know, and that's the kind of person that you could, you know, compromise. I don't know, I mean, talk about the UN stuff at all.
Well, you know, in my interview with Jim Rothstein, you know, he talks about it as well. My father had a friend that worked at the UN, and really I have nothing to add other than there's no way, because the UN's in the heart of New York City, and a lot of people like to think that the UN is like an enemy of the United States, and they're going to come here, UN troops are going to come in and take over the United States. But you know, from being in New York City, you know, we control the UN. And when you go back, I always think back to this thing. I was listening to these wiretaps one time. It was this in the commission case in New York City back in the 80s. And this guy was saying, he was on the tape, and he was saying, don't worry about this union guy because we control everybody around him. The paper boy works for us. His receptionist works for us. The guy that mops his floors works for us. Everybody around is, you know, his boss, you know. They all work for us. If we want to bust his balls, we can start busting his balls at 7 a.m. in the morning and get him to do what we want because everybody around him is ours. And with the money and the – a guy like Epstein can afford – and look what he did to the prosecutor. Mm. So if there's someone in the UN or something that he wants to target, he can insert people around that guy all over the place, you know? Until he controls them and gets them in a position where he can blackmail them. Then he doesn't have to worry about controlling them. If you look at him, the quote he makes about the thing about they don't want to lose their money, so my job is to protect them from losing their money, you know? And really his only client is this guy that we know about is Wexler. But, you know, he got into Bear Stearns through that guy, what's his, Greenberg?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, would be a kind of guy that doesn't want to lose his money, you know?
Right.
You know? So, I don't know what to say, but...
Yeah. Well, just, I mean, the blackmail can really, you know, if you want to get ahead in this world, blackmail is a great way. I don't know, maybe we'll leave it here for that. I'll just say this. God only knows who's blackmailing Epstein. You know, I mean, people don't get into blackmail for no reason. Many times they're being blackmailed.
But real quick, a lot of people try to blackmail. Okay, look at this guy. The butler tried to sell the
right.
Right. He didn't get away with it. Bill Cosby's daughters, I believe it's his daughter. You know, she tried to get some money out of him, and she was arrested for blackmail. Hmm. There were some guys who tried to. I'm not going to mention his name, but there were some guys who tried to blackmail a big shot in Hollywood. About a sex tape that they had, and these guys disappeared. Okay, yeah, so blackmail is a ballsy move, you know, and you got to have something behind you in order to pull it off. So, you know, it's one thing to have blackmail dirt, and it's another thing to be able to really use it and get away with it.
Yeah, and again, I mean, you know, if Epstein, some of his, you know, very, very high up friends, obviously that's his insurance. You know, well, he feels confident enough to blackmail people because, you know, he knows that someone's got his back.
He started in Coney Island. You know what I mean?
From
nowhere, man. Public school. He went to public school.
Yeah. No, and again, I mean, he's a great case study in you know, narcissistic, psychopathic kind of behavior. This guy comes from nothing, from nowhere, somehow rises to this level of, I mean, opulent wealth and power, and he's somewhat untouchable. But you know, I know I'm gonna, you know, keep following this. And again, you know, Ed, thanks so much for joining us on this. Anything you wanna add about Epstein or quickly just about the way that these things get covered in the alternative media? Because I notice, you know, there's a sometimes people will jump on these pedophile stories. Like it's, you know, the best thing in the world to be talking about. Like, people were obsessing over Jimmy Savile. But I was actually surprised at how few people were covering Epstein. And I see that as, I mean, this is a game changer in terms of the people he's connected. I mean, two of the, you know, two front runners in the presidential election, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, are connected with this guy.
And not a word is being said. I don't know if you've been listening, but I'm getting my press credentials. I'm going to be able to go to these campaign events.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. And it's looking like I'm going to be at every event. I'm going to get all the schedules. I'm going to be able to go there, and I'll be right there. You know, I'll be able to ask questions, and I'm going to ask these questions, and then I'll never get credentials again.
Right. That's how I know. I mean, someone doesn't even throw it out.
No.
You know, not even like, oh, would you like to address the scandal or, you know. Because, I mean, they'll give them the softball questions.
Yeah, but this never even gets brought up. Come on, Bill Clinton was on the plane, you know, my God, you know. Not even – and also Epstein donated $3 million to the Clinton Foundation.
Yes.
You know, and that's never brought up. But to sum all this up, I'd like to say this. First of all, I think that every time I've come on any show and talked about this case, and you're the best as far as doing your research and doing your homework on this. I'm very, very impressed, and I thank you. I've learned a
thank
lot.
Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I've learned a lot of new stuff from this show today. Thank you. I am a little disturbed about what I kind of saw as certain people in the alternative media trying to play this off as, oh, these girls, they were flying around the world, they enjoyed it. And that was going on almost every single day. If you're thinking, you know what I'm talking about. And that was going on day after day after day, this guy's trying to whitewash this thing. And it makes me suspicious because it's so cut and dried, I can't see how anybody can try and paint it that way. And I do know what you're talking about, how people they want to
they almost get off on the details.
Right.
And you know?
It's exploitive.
Yeah.
You know? A lot of what you hear out there on these shows just for the ratings and just for the titillation and stuff. And I have even been invited on a couple of shows too where I just kind of saw things were just getting ugly and just too much hype and too much tabloid kind of stuff. And why, how things get covered up in the media, I don't know, man. We were talking about this last night as well, you know, with Tom Secker, that some of these people in the media are just dumb, you know?
Right.
Some of them are just dumb, and they don't do their homework, you know? And there's a lot of egos involved and a lot of ambition in politics, and you don't want to piss off the wrong people. And you want to get invited to those parties, you know, and you want to do those kind of things, and you want to have access. Like, even I have to think twice. If I want to have access to these presidential candidates and ask questions, I got to think twice about what I do, because I'll get carted off in handcuffs.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do, man? Listen, this is the job. This is the profession we have. This is the life we have chosen.
Yeah, right.
This is the life we have chosen, man. So we just keep pushing forward. And fight the good fight and stick to the truth, man, and honesty. Do your research. Do your homework, man, because there's enough good, real stuff to report on and talk about and stories that are real, real stories that you can report on that other people aren't taking the time to work on. So just keep doing that, man, and just keep moving forward.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I would echo that entirely. Ed Opperman, thank you so much for coming on the show. I would love to have you back on to not only, you know, update the listeners on anything Epstein related, but just to hear some of your stories about New York and working as a private eye out here in New York and just some of the wild stuff that you saw when you were there. I know you mentioned it here and there on your radio show. So, Ed, thank you so much for joining us, and I hope I can talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much. Anytime. I'd love to come back.
Okay, so that was our conversation with Ed Opperman from the Opperman Report. I hope you do go out and listen to some of Ed's episodes. There's so many excellent ones. Really great investigations. Wonderful guests. Tom Secker, of course, was just on that. And I think my listeners would really appreciate a lot of what Ed does. It does some really great work. But if you're interested in some more of my work, then please go to PorkinsPolicyReview.com. And there, of course, you can find every single episode free for download. If you want to subscribe to my podcast, you can, of course, do that through the email blast function. You can follow the RSS feed. You can always follow me on Twitter at PorkinsPolicy. And also, please do subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/1138Porkins. And if you do like this work, if you do, you know, if you want to hear more conversations like the one that me and Ed just had, then please do spread the word, you know, tell your friends about it, put it up on your social media, email it. Simply just telling someone is great. And of course, if you want to support me in another way, then you can always subscribe to BoilingFrogsPost.com, where, of course, I am the partner producer on the BFP Roundtable series. So yeah, if you want to support me that way, that's always an excellent way. There's just a ton of great people on that. Tom Secker, Guillermo Jimenez, James Corbett, Christoph Gehrman, Mark Mondelik, of course, Sibel Edmonds, Peter B. Collins, everybody, Andrew Gavin Marshall. I know I'm going to forget some people right now, but that's always a great way to support my work as well. So thank you all so much. I know, yet again, it's been a month since I've had a podcast up, but I am working on some interesting things. I'm not going to really get into them right now because it seems like every time I mention an episode, it never gets done, so I won't do that here. But we do have some excellent episodes in the works. I can say that me and Tom are working behind the scenes on season two, of the CIA in Hollywood. We haven't forgotten about that. We already have the rough list of movies and guests lined up, so look forward to that probably in a couple months. We're aiming maybe towards the beginning of next year, but we'll have to see exactly about all of that. And look out for some Homeland-related episodes. The new season of Homeland is coming out, and Tom and I, of course, will be covering that, so we'll see how we're going to be doing that. But once again, thank you all so much. Again, please do spread the word. Talk about this. You know, whatever you want to do. Every little bit helps, and I'm very appreciative to all of the listeners. So thank you so much for listening to this episode, and I will be talking to you very soon.